from the agriculture, okay, instead of the from industry. But even talking about agriculture, Chinese agriculture is different agriculture than any other countries.
And politically?
People have their freedom of choice, and whatever political system they want, it's their business. Anyway, for Chinese, we have chosen the socialist system. That's our choice. The developed world, you know, they want, you know, a whole world will follow their model, their democracy. No, it's impossible. You know, China can never be Europe, but that doesn't mean that we cannot help each other. We cannot learn from each other. China will learn, are prepared to learn, whatever is good for our own interests.
And yet, it's all very well to say you want to be friends with everybody, not to judge your diplomatic partners, but clean government, human rights, democracy, surely these things are universal and desirable anywhere.
Oh, yes. We all like good governance. I think any government, any policy, you know, without support of the majority of the people, it won't fly. It won't have a chance. And corruption is the enemy of the clean governance. For many, many years, we practiced socialist planned economy based almost entirely on the former Soviet Union. And 28 years ago, we began this economic reform. Now, we are at a very, very unique period. You know, the old concept, old practices, and old policies are not dead yet. Okay. While at the same time, the new measures, new policies, they are there, but not fully enforced. And this is the period, a very vulnerable period, vulnerable in the sense that some bad elements will take advantage of the goodness set of policies or practices. But let me emphasize, my government, my people, they're absolutely confident we can overcome all those problems.
Does that transitional period inside China affect the conduct of foreign policy? Because going back to promoting ideals of clean government, human rights and democracy abroad, I could mention to you Sudan, Zimbabwe, Uzbekistan, Venezuela. These are all countries where you'd be hard-pressed to describe any of them as upholding clean government, human rights and democracy. And there is the United States and various other countries trying to push them in the direction of some of these values. And the Americans would argue that China is actually obstructing that.
Well, not at all. Well, we believe that for Sudan, there are the Security Council resolutions. We joined the agreement, and China has made its contributions to the formulation of those resolutions
by
on Sudan.
By watering them down and often abstaining
from them. I would call it the other way. This is a very complex issue. Sanction alone won't solve the issue. We should encourage the people to talk to each other, to have a peaceful settlement. And China have a particular sympathy towards countries like Sudan, Zimbabwe, because we had almost identical past. You know, we are all developing countries. We know what kind of miseries the wars and the sanctions can have on the people. But those who advocate sanctions are those from the rich countries. You know, that's the way we have some kind of sympathies towards those poor countries. We wish them well.
And is that purely altruistic, or is Chinese national interest involved because China is buying substantial quantities of oil from Sudan?
Well, yes, we need their oil, certainly, no doubt about it. Everybody needs oil. There is impression is created as if that China is befriending Sudan because of the oil. No, not at all. Those who advocate this theory must have some ulterior motives, okay? Because if you read the history of Sino-Sudan bilateral relations, you will find that China were there, even long before the oil was discovered. You know, this year marks the 50th anniversary of establishment related diplomatic relations between China and African countries. We had huge celebrations. We have a long, traditional relationship, good friendly relations with African countries, because China is different. They know what China has done for them, what China is doing there, and we are both, you know, we believe that the friendship, good relations between Africa and China, you know, in all fields, including oil, you know, is for the mutual interest of the both parties. So those who feel uneasy, I sympathize with them. Okay, those feel jealousy, I understand. I'm sorry for them. But they have no choice. Nothing can stop the development of friendly relations with African countries. Well, we are so proud to have Africa as our friends.
You're listening to The Interview in the BBC World Service with me, Carrie Gracie, and my guest today, Sha Zhukang, Chinese ambassador to the United Nations in Geneva. And over the past 4 or 5 years, that programme of action is already rolling out in a dramatic fashion, not just Africa, but Latin America, Southeast Asia too. China enormously active economically and diplomatically, selling its products, buying resources, building infrastructure. Is China trying to replace the United States as the preeminent power in these regions?
You know, China's development in Africa, Asia, and Latin America, I think, is developing fast because it meets the interest of all the countries in those continents. We all like it. And this has not harmed anyone or threatened anyone. And I think, actually, on the contrary, it has benefited everyone in the world. Well, the U.S. is the biggest developed country, and China, the biggest developing countries. I believe that, you know, we have a lot to offer to the other side. So China is a developing country, and it will remain so for at least another 50 more years. We don't have the ambition. We never even thought of replacing them. You know, nobody can replace anywhere else. That's our belief. You know, we are, U.S. is an independent, sovereign country, and China is a developing country, the biggest one with enormous potentials.
It sounds very reassuring, but China's hunger for resources is enormous. The United States' hunger for resources is enormous. Can you imagine circumstances where you might need to fight for access to your resources?
Well, let me say, you know, thanks to the effort by the mass media, perhaps, you know, China is, as you have said, the Chinese hunger for resources. But let me tell you, it's not exactly true. You know, China is a country with a lot of resources, you know, but as far as oil is concerned, we may be a little bit short of it. Okay.
Now, it's not just, Ambassador, with all due respect, it's not just oil, is it? I mean, there's Brazilian timber, there's Indonesian timber, there's soybeans, a lot of the rainforest being chopped down to provide soybeans, much of it going to China. It is mineral resources, in all kinds of ways.
You know, it depends. You know, for example, the coal, would you take coal as mineral resources? We have plenty of coal. Now, as far as energy is concerned, I checked with my government. I discovered that China is self-reliant, as far as energy is concerned, by 91.8%, you know, energy. So that is to say China has 8.2% energy shortage. And for that, we need, you know, to import from outside.
To buy gas fields in Australia, to buy oil fields in Nigeria. I mean, the range is massive. And obviously, the expectation of the upward spiral in China's energy needs.
You are right. Australian people are happy. Our Russian friends are happy. And our Brazilian people are happy. Argentina people are happy that we are buying. Because through this buying, you know, they get also the economic benefits.
And yet, returning to my question, do you foresee a moment when the competition and rivalry for those resources gets nasty?
Competition is a good word. We love it. You know, we have WTO, which will provide the rules and the laws, and, you know. So let's compete strictly according to the rules of the game, worked out internationally. If we work together, I'm sure that we can make the life much better.
And can you work together? I mean, it would be a lot easier to resolve Taiwan. It would be a lot easier to resolve the North Korean nuclear issue if you and Washington saw eye to eye on all of these things.
Oh, yes. You know, talking about Taiwan, it's a fact that Taiwan is a part and parcel of China. It has always been part of China. Taiwan is the most important issue. That is to say, this issue on which we don't have any room for compromise.
But that is where China and China's foreign policy doesn't sound very pragmatic, does it? And does start to sound very ideological. Why don't you just shrug and let the Taiwanese do their own thing?
Well, I think for any sovereign country in the world today, you know, no country will tolerate, you know, the division of the country forever.
You've been involved in the international community for long enough to know that's just simply not true. A referendum in the UK on the independence or otherwise of Scotland, if the Scots had chosen independence, that's the way they would have gone.
Okay, that explains the difference between the British, perhaps, or the Chinese. The history, you know, we are product of history, product of the civilization. That's the way we look at it. And according to the United Nations Charter, you know, the sovereignty, territorial integrity is the most sacred thing. It should be protected. We treat territorial integrity more important than our lives. Life, it's very pragmatical approach. No force on the world can shake Chinese nation's determination to achieve the unification of my great motherland. Let me say, the moment it declares independence by Taiwan, supported by whoever, China will have no choice. We'll do the business through whatever means available to my government. Nobody should have illusion on that.
This obsession about Taiwan, it constrains your foreign policy. It forces you into straitjacket of talking about certain kinds of reactions which would inevitably profoundly damage the economic development that's been so central to the Chinese project for the past 30 years.
Economic development, we want it. Because without economic development, they cannot do anything else. It's very, very important. You know, China is a developing country. You know, the importance of the living of our people is the priority job of my government. If we have to choose between sovereignty, territorial integrity, and economic development, we will choose the maintenance of state sovereignty and territorial integrity. This is the other core interest. But once we have achieved, you know, this integrity, we still have time to build our economy. But if China is forced to choose, you know, I told you, we will choose the territorial integrity.
It's a high price to pay after a few square kilometers.
You are right. You know, I said at any cost. It's not a matter of how big Taiwan is, you know, how useful it is. But for China, one inch of the territory is more valuable than the life of our people. We will never concede on that.
Well, it's interesting because there I think we've established the constraints on pragmatism in Chinese foreign policy. What about military might? China's leaders talk about peaceful development. Why then is China building up its military forces so assertively?
China's military power or build of military power is very much exaggerated. You know, when China is a huge country, which, like any sovereign country, is entitled to national defense. And our military budget is very moderate, you know, particularly in terms of per capita income. It's very, very low in the world.
The American Defense Secretary, Donald Rumsfeld, says that China is spending more than the government acknowledges, that it's expanding its missile capabilities, developing advanced military technology. And he says, why pour all this money into the military at a time when China needs as much as it can for its economic development, at the same time as China faces no threat from any other country?
We don't need anyone to preach or teach us. And no one in the world is qualified to teach and preach China. And the United States, as far as the military business is concerned, U.S. is the least qualified guy to preach and teach China, because it has the biggest military arsenal in the world. It's the most advanced technology and science technology for their military build-up. It has the biggest, well, the biggest military budget. Yet, this guy is telling us, China, you should stop. It's not in your interest. Okay, it's better for U.S. to shut up. Keep quiet. It's much, much better. China, the military build-up is not threatening anyone. It's for legitimate defense. If you don't have any ambitions, you should not be afraid of. You know, you read our history. China have not sent any. So we are not fighting anywhere. We are not killing the innocent people anywhere in the world today. But look what they are doing today. So, and we have to be careful. Careful to make sure no one in the world can harm China. We are determined to defend our country. With little bit military increase, they are trying to make a huge story about it.
Well, China, you say little military increase, but the Americans, Don Rumsfeld, said that China is now the world's third largest military budget after the United States and Russia. Is that true?
I don't know third or fourth or fifth, but anyway, what I want to tell U.S. that, are you the number one? Is it true that you have almost 50% of the world in military budget? And why do you have that? And the China population is six times or five times that of the United States. China's territory is as big as the United States. Why blame China? No, forget it. It's high time to shut up. Don't preach and teach China. You know, I'm sorry, because I'm being not diplomatic in using my language.
Well, it's quite interesting, isn't it?
But I feel very strong about it.
Yes, and it clearly makes you angry.
You know, we don't have any soldier abroad. We're not killing anyone. Look what the way they are doing in the world today, right? So, China is threatening. China's build-up is not in China's interest. Who knows China better? China itself knows it better. China is not a member of any military alliance. Look, being a superpower, it is building up all kinds of alliances in the world today for the defense of the territory of the United States? Right. Don't tell us anyway. It's the U.S. sovereign right to do whatever they deem good for them. But don't tell us what is good for China. Thank you very much. Our military capability is exclusively for the self-defense, to make sure to deter those who dare to harm China.
Ambassador Xia Zhukang, thank you very much for joining us on the interview.
Okay, you know, on certain issues, I can be very emotional because I really, you know, for disarmament matters, military matters, I worked on this this area for 17 years nonstop. You know, I really feel that China is wronged. You know, China is misunderstood. We don't have any ambitions.
Ambassador Xia Zhukang, Chinese ambassador to the United Nations in Geneva, was talking to Carrie Gracie. The producer was Rebecca Newman and the editor, Jeremy Skeet. Well, next week on the interview, you can hear the former German Foreign Minister, Joschka Fischer,